Thank you for listening to the Article Podcast from the UBS Art Advisory Team, which guides individuals and families towards best practices and principles to build, maintain, and plan for exceptional lasting collections. My name is Rachel Peart, UBS Art Advisory Specialist for the U.S. and co-host of this series, in which UBS will share insights from practitioners in the art and collectibles world. While my guests and I sometimes discuss services and capabilities that they or their organizations provide, please note that UBS has no formal affiliation with any of our guests or their organizations, and in no way is UBS promoting or endorsing our guests or their organizations. And now, on to the episode. Before the hammer, today we are going behind the curtain to explore important elements of an auction that are refined long before the auctioneer takes to the podium. We recently explored estimates of auction, and today we are looking at how the marquee evening sales are built. Today we are speaking with David Galperin, who serves as Vice Chairman and Head of Contemporary Art at Sotheby's. He is primarily responsible for driving strategy and business getting for the contemporary art auctions. David joined Sotheby's in 2013, quickly becoming a principal contributor to the Contemporary Art Department and head of the Contemporary Art Evening Sales in 2017. In 2021, David assumed the role of the Head of Contemporary Art for the Americas and co-head of Marquee Sales. David has played a pivotal role in bringing many major American collections to market, including the exceptional outcome of the Maclow collection, 100% sold sale that achieved $922 million across 2021 and 2022. David will share highlights for the upcoming spring season, including the impressive Robert Mnuchin Collector at Heart evening sale. But first, we're going inside an important component of auction, how an evening sale is built, curated, and refined. David, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who might not be aware of auction cycles, there are two major seasons at auction in New York, November and then what we're getting ready for, which is May. So I know this is a very busy time and you and your colleagues are preparing final agreements for the May season in New York. There are many topics we could talk about, but I want to specifically focus on the creation of evening sales. We're so used to seeing big headlines of the collections and the sales as they're announced when exhibitions open, just like last season in the wonderful new gallery space. We saw lines around the block. And of course, there's the excitement of watching the auctions themselves, packed rooms, the live stream worldwide auctions, and that they're followed by many standout world auction records and moments. But these sales are so carefully and strategically created to get to that point. So I want to start at the beginning. So David, when you are starting conversation with collectors about their collection or individual works that might be contenders for an evening sale, when does that start? And at what point does it become clear that a work should be included at evening sale? Or you actually know it's a bigger conversation and it might need a dedicated single owner sale?
That's a good question. I mean, some conversations take many years and some conversations take several days. So there's really not a set formula for how things come into the sale. I would say there's a large portion of our business that is reactive and some portion of our business that is proactive. On the reactive front, what I'm referring to are certain life events that might trigger sales. Things like estate events when a person passes away. There could be a divorce that drives the sale. You know, there's various life moments that trigger people to sell a work at auction. There's also many instances where we're going after things proactively. So we will identify individual works that we think the market is really primed for and approach those collectors of those works with an opportunity or really a solicitation to try to include the work for sale. In some cases, you know, collectors will come to us just a few weeks or a few months before an auction to begin the conversation. And in other instances, you know, there are works that I've spent years of my career trying to convince sellers to bring to market. So it really varies on the situation at hand. And of course, the different collectors and works of art that we're facing.
Yes, I can imagine. And really on the shorter time frame, I think what might be surprising from someone who's not working inside the auction house is how quickly some of these conversations and decisions can be made. So you would say even weeks out from a deadline, you're having some conversations about contenders for an evening sale.
I mean, I could tell you that, for example, for the upcoming May season, there were conversations that started the day after our November sales closed. You know, so just days following what was a very successful series of November sales, we started getting calls from collectors who wanted to discuss including works in the next round of sales in May. So that was a several month long conversation. But there's also works that are going to be in our May sales that we don't even know are coming to market yet. I'm going to get a call for sure in 2 weeks about something, hopefully something great that someone will include in May, and it won't be too late. So it really, again, it spans the gamut in terms of timing.
Yeah. And can you touch upon what you find are the benefits for the conversations that you're having with either an individual collector or a family that's looking over a collection that do start years out? And even if they know they're not maybe ready to sell immediately, what kind of benefits there are in having that longer lead time to really find the right timing for them?
What I would say is, you know, there are many collectors who will think about their collection from a long-term standpoint. And I have many conversations with people who want to come up with, you know, 5-10-year plans, even think about their estate planning so that they can strategize and identify how they might envision their collection to be dispersed following their passing. In some cases, you know, many collectors want to be involved in that process during their lifetime. And so the advantage of talking through these things quite far in advance allows you to really react to market trends and different market forces that might make something a really good time to sell or might make something a really bad time to sell. And being able to work hand in hand with a collector over a long period of time so that you can, you know, shape the strategy depending on market timing can be something that's really useful in terms of, you know, hitting the market at the right time and achieving maximum results.
Absolutely. I think that's very helpful also for people that might, collectors that might be considering when to start a conversation, that it's never really too early to start having those kind of discussions with an auction house.
I would also say that, you know, some collections are quite fixed. You know, there are collectors who acquired works within a certain period of time and the collection is a fixed entity and they're not necessarily acquiring or and have no interest in deaccessioning. Other collections are evolving constantly, right? So there are collections that are in the process of always being upgraded. Maybe something is sold to make room for something better or different, or, you know, these can be evolving organisms. And the advantage of working with a collection over a longer period of time and over the long term is really being able to shape that strategy around, you know, how a collector thinks about what they're doing.
Yes, being very intentional. I'd like to hear more, if you can walk us through the curation and contender phase. When a work is really on the fence of being included or not included in an evening sale, what factors usually tip the decision one way or another?
Every time we approach a potential sale, we think very carefully about what is the optimal platform in which to maximize the value of that object. There's a lot of considerations at play, of course. You know, one can be the timing on behalf of the seller. Another might be the market for that object, where the market is best and where one can really truly squeeze the most value for that object. I think we will approach each situation individually. Sometimes we might recommend auction, sometimes we might recommend private sale. You know, that's another strategy that we employ quite frequently with a work of art. And then when we've identified that a work is really best suited for auction, of course, there's a variety of different avenues one can pursue. We have auctions all around the world, basically every month, right? So an object might be best suited for a New York sale room, and an object might be best suited for a Hong Kong sale room or a London sale room or a French sale room. You know, it really just depends on that object. And so we think not only about the sale channel, we also think about the sale location. And then drilling down even further, you know, say something is really best suited for a New York sale. Is it going into an evening sale? Is it going into a day sale? Is it going into what we call our contemporary curated sales, which happen in our off-cycle, off-season moments? Those are more of our middle market moments. you know, there's a, again, a variety of different factors and considerations that come into play as to why we might recommend something for one sale over another. I think the misconception is that it's always about the price or always about the value, because the evening sale is historically the highest value platform that we have. However, there are works in that, I would call it $500,000 to $3 million price threshold that can go into a variety of different sale channels. One, it can be sold in an evening sale. It might be the top lot of a day sale. It might be a star lot of a contemporary curated sale in March or September. You know, we will think through what is the best platform for that object.
And that makes sense, because when you think about exceptional works that you must come across all the time, as you just touched base on, even with really substantial values and estimate ranges, not everything might be best served in the evening sale. And I would include in that, I'm curious, when you're curating these evening sales, if it's really you're thinking about works that complement one another versus compete against one another, and how the different lots within the evening sale sort of build one another up and work well together cohesively.
Exactly. We're always thinking about context. So, you know, work might really shine in an evening sale, or a work might have a larger platform as being the star of the day sale the following day, even if it's an evening sale caliber object, where in the day sale, it might, you know, be the cover lot, for example, where it wouldn't be in an evening sale because you've got $100 million paintings in that context. So again, it really depends. We think through that very carefully. I would also say we'd like to think about where the audience for that object is. You know, is it an audience that will react more favorably if the work's importance is signaled by being in an evening sale context? Or is it an audience for an object that might be wider in a day sale, where you can maybe drive more bidders in that middle market price threshold? It really depends. And like you allude to, you know, we're always thinking about what other works are on the market at the same time. You know, we're not going to want to put three identical works or three very similar works by the same artist in the same sale. We might advise collectors to wait until the next round of sales, or to consider an alternate sale platform so that the two works don't compete implicitly against one another in the same sale context.
Yes, looking to strive for those ultimate results. And commanding attention and focus in the room, as well as creating healthy competition for the duration of an evening sale, is crucial. What are the most effective ways you try to create those optimal conditions when it becomes sale evening? Is there a limit to the number of lots you put into the sale, or a particular order, or the range of works that you're putting into an auction?
I would say lot order is paramount. And this is something that I really enjoy doing up until the very minute that the sale is finalized and the catalog goes up online. You know, we think very strategically about what the rhythm and pacing of the sale is. You know, you want to put a work in the first few lots that is going to have, you know, is going to have 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 bidders compete for it, because that's going to set off this incredible energy at the start of the sale that is like, it's like a gun going off at the start of a race, right? It injects energy into the room. It creates a sense of drama that warms everyone up and makes everyone feel at ease and excited, right? You then want to make sure that you're placing your kind of anchor lots, so the highest value lots, within the right crescendos within the sale. So, you know, you're not going to have your three highest value lots back to back. You're going to want to create a rhythm, a little bit of a run up, and then a little bit of a cool down before you get to the next one. You know, that pacing is really important as you try to orchestrate the optimal rhythm and energy within a sale room.
And would you say, roughly, how much interest in the works and competition is known before the sale? When you're thinking about this, as you said, is really it's almost like being a conductor when you're thinking about the pacing and order. Does some pre-sale interest also factor into that?
Definitely. You know, we try to choreograph the sales to the best of our ability. At the end of the day, it is, these are live events. And one of the greatest things about auction is the element of surprise. So there's really only so much you know going into the auction. But we, you know, we're dealing with a very high stakes and high value sale, right? So we look very carefully and analyze the interest heading into the sale. We take note of how many registered bidders might be on a certain lot to give us an indication of where something might sell or how the bidding might go. We really analyze how many inquiries we've had around lots, what the tenor of the conversations we're having with interested collectors are, to get a real sense or prediction as to how something might go. That's really important so that we can provide our sellers with the best advice as we head into a sale. And so really we can manage the sale as successfully as possible. But what I will say is while we do a very good job of tracking interest and try to have the best sense of what's going to happen when we go into the sale room, it never goes exactly like you think it's going to. And that's the beauty of live auction, that there's, it's live, you know? And so somebody that you're expecting to bid might not pick up the phone when you call them to bid, but two other people might pop up in the room that you had no idea they were going to bid because they kept their cards very close to their chest. And suddenly the work, you know, goes for double what you expected it to. So that's the most exciting part of this all, that no matter how much you try to put all of the pieces of the puzzle together and choreograph every element of an auction, the success hinges on a little bit of luck at the end of the day.
That really segues nicely to my last question, because I do want to segue and hear more about what is coming up in the spring sales. But I have to know from you, what is a favorite evening sale auction moment that you've had? I'm sure there are many, but where the performance of work either went exactly as you hoped and planned, as we discussed, or where it completely exceeded your expectations.
I think there are so many, because there's I can think back on so many good and bad moments, by the way. but just in recent memory, you know, we had this extraordinary sale in November of works from Leonard Lauder's collection. And this was the opening sale of our new building at the Boyer on Madison Avenue, which was formerly home to the Whitney Museum. And the star lot of that sale was this sensational Gustav Klimt portrait of Elizabeth Lederer. And you know, these masterpiece Klimt portraits come to market maybe once in a generation. And so the sale itself was something that was highly anticipated, but really difficult to predict. You know, we had, everyone was in universal admiration for the picture. It was the most beloved thing on the market that season. But of course you're dealing with a painting, you know, about worth over $100 million, and it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen the night of the sale. It turned out we had six bidders compete over $120 million, and the final sale price was $236.4 million, which was an exceptional result and truly exactly what you hope for when auction magic really strikes.
It was such an exceptional, and is such an exceptional piece, especially in this beautiful moment to celebrate the opening of the new galleries. And it is currently the highest auction price for work of art at auction.
Yeah, sold at Sotheby's.
What I'd like to do, and we're talking about this very strong November season you had, as we look ahead to the spring season, can you tell us more about the impressive Mnuchin collection and evening sale? And maybe particular to tie in what we've been talking about, what made this a perfect collection to have a standalone evening sale? And then any other highlights you'd also like to share?
Bob Mnuchin was a legend. I mean, he was one of the greatest dealers, but also eyes for post-war and contemporary art. He, you know, famously made a career pivot after working at Goldman Sachs and became an art dealer, opening up his gallery on the Upper East Side. And he really built some of the country's greatest collections of post-war American art. and developed a reputation for having the greatest eye for such artists like Mark Rothko, de Kooning, Franz Kline. And so to be able to bring his personal collection to market and have works from the collection by those artists, Rothko, de Kooning, and Kline, that, you know, really represent the very best of those artists' works. They were selected by the person and held on to by the person who probably had the great single greatest eye for that generation of artists is a truly remarkable opportunity and a privilege. What's exciting about the sale, there's 11 lots in the standalone evening sale. And beyond the artists that I mentioned, there's great examples by artists like Jeff Koons and David Hammonds, who are two artists that Bob really championed over the course of his life as a dealer. You know, I love the story how every museum in New York was trying to do a Jeff Koons retrospective, but obviously given the fragility and the ambition of so many of Koons' sculptures, it was a very expensive and difficult show to put together. And so who did it first? Bob in his gallery, years before the Whitney staged their Jeff Koons retrospective. Or, you know, David Hammonds, who's notoriously evasive to the commercial world. Every gallery dealer wanted to show him. Every museum wanted to do a Hammonds show. And who did he choose to do a show with? Bob Mnuchin. So, you know, I think beyond being so well known for his eye for the great abstract expressionists, he was also such a brave and fearless and daring dealer, and had such a deep-rooted passion for art and objects that being able to offer his personal collection is such a unique gift.
And I would imagine, as you said, these are 11 lots that are on offer, and this really made a lot of strategic sense to have it as its own standalone sale. And then there obviously will be the other evening sales as well. But can you tell us when a collection significant like this one does make sense as a standalone?
Yeah, we often will sell large collections in standalone sales alongside our what we call our traditional various owner sales. And we decide to do that when a collection is of course of a certain value and importance, but also when there's, you know, a reason or a narrative to tell to sell the collection within its own dedicated sale. And we sell individual works of art or smaller groups very successfully within our various owner sales, oftentimes publicly designated, coming from great, great collections. But oftentimes we will separate those collections out that have a particularly distinct narrative or reason to be separated out in that way.
Right. And the significant provenance and, as you mentioned, the story behind these collections and how they were assembled. And I know it's early on in auction cycle-wise. As you mentioned, you could get a call any day in the next few weeks as you finalize the sale. So I know that there will be many more highlights that will be announced in the near future. I didn't know if there's anything else you wanted to mention or if you wanted to note when the galleries are scheduled to be open this spring.
For sure. There's a lot of other highlights of the sale. One of the great things that we've announced thus far is a painting by Jean-Michel Basquiat from 1983 called Museum Security, estimated in the region of $45 million. Really exciting highlight in the sale. We're also selling works from the collection of Jean-Thierry de Gunsberg. And this is a really important collection, both of 20th century design and fine art. And so we'll be selling the 20th century design in a standalone sale at the end of April in New York with masterpieces by artists like Lalanne and Dunand. And then we'll be offering some really important fine art masterpieces from the collection. Artists like Mark Rothko, Lucio Fontana, Robert Ryman, Calder, Agnes Martin, that will be offered in our contemporary art and modern art evening sales in May. So another great collection with a fabulous story and a really distinct eye behind the collection. Plenty more to come.
Okay. There's a lot to look forward to this season.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot to look forward to and plenty more to be announced in the coming weeks. We will open our exhibitions on May 2nd, Saturday, May 2nd, and we are open and free to the public at the Breuer Building at 75th and Madison.
David, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.